From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Pablo Peña with a local and statewide news update. University of Alaska President Jim Johnson has resigned. His resignation was accepted during an emergency meeting of the UA Board of Regents today. Vice President Michelle Rizik will serve as acting president effective immediately until an interim president can be appointed in July. KUAC's Robin reports.
UA Board of Regents Chair Sherry Beretta wrote in an announcement shortly after the noon executive session that the decision was mutual and made after considerable reflection by the board. She spoke from an office in Tetitlek during the public portion of the online meeting after the executive session.
We know that change in leadership can be unsettling, but we are confident that this decision, though difficult, is the correct one for the university.
She called attention to the dire situation of the university system. A $75 million cut is planned over 3 years, and pandemic expenses have cut deeply into university revenue. She also complimented Johnson's dedication.
During Jim's 5 years as president, he has led the university through unprecedented challenges with integrity, unparalleled effort, and distinction.
In the announcement, Johnson was quoted, "It has been a real challenge leading the university over the last 5 years, but we made a lot of progress too. Looking forward, there is no institution more important for creating opportunities for Alaskans than the university." Johnson will be available to assist with the transition until July 1st when his resignation from the university goes into effect. Rizik serves as the university's vice president of university relations, chief budget and strategy officer, and serves as the system liaison for facilities and land management. Beretta's announcement says Rizik's 22 years with UA covers finance and human resources and as the university's chief advocate in Juneau. Raised in Alaska, Rizik earned her undergraduate and graduate degrees from UA Fairbanks. The board will appoint an interim president after consulting with the three UA chancellors and other leaders. The board expects an appointment no later than July 15th and will start a formal search for UA's next president later this year. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
Construction of rural Alaska's largest solar panel installation is currently underway above the Arctic Circle in Kotzebue. Project leaders have focused on hiring local workers and hope to bring down the costs of electricity for the area's residents. KOTZ's Tiffany Creed reports.
Since construction of Kotzebue Electric Association's solar project began in May, a locally hired crew has clocked in 10-hour days, 6 days a week. They've hauled 1,440 solar panels across uneven tundra and installed the final one on June 18th. The 576-kilowatt project is the second largest in the state. The construction site is southeast of the local airport at the end of a long gravelly access road. The rows of panels bring new fixtures to a rolling landscape marked by an aging wind farm that began KEA's run with renewable energy in the late 90s.
When we first installed the first three wind turbines at the wind farm, as we call it, we thought that was the greatest thing ever in the world.
That's Matt Bergen, an engineer with KEA. The coast of Northwest Alaska proved to be a prime location for capturing wind energy, and Bergen says over the years, the project expanded.
And now we have 900 kilowatt turbines in addition to our fleet of smaller turbines, which are aging and approaching end of life.
Bergen is overseeing the new solar project, which in a lot of ways offsets those obsolete turbines. He says it was made possible by a global drop in the price of solar hardware over the last several years. Installation costs in tundra and permafrost are still relatively high.
It makes it somewhat more affordable. And that's what we're really going to see once it's operational is what the cost-benefit analysis looks like as far as what we're producing versus what it costs. So it looks promising, though.
KEA General Manager Martin Schroyer says that initial costs have been absorbed by local entities that also have a stake in rural energy concerns. Nana Regional Corporation received federal money to split between Kotzebue and the villages of Buckland and Deering for solar. The Northwest Arctic Borough contributed funds to the project through a grant, and KEA contributed some funding of their own.
So once we receive that money or grant, we hit the ground running.
Schroyer says that there have been some delays to the project, the most recent being the COVID-19 pandemic, which put construction behind about 5 weeks and increased costs. Installation was supposed to begin in late February after a successful 2019 bid from general contractor Alaska Native Renewable Industries. The company is based out of the interior village of Huslia, which, like Kotzebue, is off the road system, but about 10 times smaller in population. Founder and CEO Edwin Beifelt worked on a similar solar project in the neighboring village of Hughes, which has a population of about 75. Beifelt's next bid is east of Kotzebue in Shungnak.
You could do this in any community in the state, so hopefully, you know, over these next 5-10 years, we're going to keep going with this and keep doing a lot more of these projects.
Keeping in step with the goals of the KEA project, he wants to maintain a focus on local hire in rural sites.
Growing up in the village or rural Alaska, I knew that there's always a lot of talent within the community, a lot of skilled tradespeople.
Local employment is indeed another way these renewable projects allow for rural self-reliance. Along with local hire, Schroyer says that the scale of the project is also driving interest from the community.
I think the amazement is how big it is. I mean, how it's only 576 kW, but how much land it takes. It'll generate probably a good 7 months out of the year, and it's pretty exciting. We get our board excited and locals.
Though the Electric Association will still rely on diesel generators, its goal is to get to about 50% renewables. Once the project is up and running, residents should see the fuel cost adjustment figure go down on their utility bills. Reporting from Kotzebue, I'm Tiffany Creed.
Passengers on Alaska's mainline ferries are now being required to get a COVID-19 test before traveling. The Alaska Marine Highway System announced a set of new protocols Sunday it says will protect against the spread of coronavirus on its vessels. And with some exceptions, passengers 2 years and older will be required to cover their faces. Passengers on shorter-haul voyages aboard the Lacanti and Lituya will be asked to sign a screening form attesting they've had no symptoms nor have traveled to an infected area without social distancing. But the testing requirement, which mirrors rules for visitors arriving from outside Alaska, will be in force on the fleet's mainliner ships, the Kennecott, the Mananuska, and the Tustamina, even for short trips. Passengers will have to show evidence of a negative test from within 72 hours before being allowed to travel. Passengers and crew will also not be allowed on shore during port calls and will only disembark at their final destination. Alaska's ferry link with the Lower 48 is scheduled to resume Thursday with a return voyage from Ketchikan to Bellingham. Passengers are being notified of the new testing rule, though it can take several days for COVID-19 results to be processed. The Marine Highway began running ferries at reduced capacity, it says, to allow social distancing on board. The policy wasn't announced in advance, and some passengers reported being turned away and denied tickets. Earlier this month, crew members tested positive for COVID-19 aboard the Tustamina, during a trip to the Aleutians. All sailings were canceled this month. Around 150 Sitkins marched on Friday to commemorate Juneteenth. The holiday celebrates the emancipation of enslaved people in the United States. Specifically, it acknowledges the day in 1865 when enslaved people in Texas finally received word of their liberation, over 2 years after President Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. The group of Sitkins marched from Crescent Harbor Shelter to Totem Square. Many held signs in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement. This is the second large-scale demonstration in Sitka this month. The first was a silent vigil held on June 1st to honor George Floyd, a black man who died in Minneapolis police custody last month. Floyd's death sparked nationwide protests after a widely circulated video showed a white police officer pressing his knee on Floyd's neck over 8 minutes. The vigil in honor of Floyd drew a crowd of at least 250 people. Smaller groups of protesters have stood at Sitka's Lone Roundabout nearly every day for at least 2 weeks in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement, in hopes of calling attention to both systematic and systemic racism in America and in Sitka. And some Alaska residents have questioned whether a statue of a British explorer in downtown Anchorage should be removed as monuments to historical figures are being dismantled across the country. The Anchorage Daily News reported that the statue is of Captain James Cook, who came to Alaska in 1778 in what is now known as Prince William Sound and Cook Inlet while searching for the Northwest Passage. Anchorage Mayor Ethan Berkowitz said Wednesday that he would like to modify the monument and use this as an opportunity as a teaching moment.